time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
Hey, hey, hey. Happy Thursday. It's Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes with you on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Happy to have you with us. Hope you enjoyed the bench. We are Vanessa and Gallant. Some Deshaun Watson news again dropping yesterday. I think this is like the fourth or fifth day in a row that we've had something coming from the Deshaun Watson case.
And as everyone listening knows, we love talking about this.
We like
to rub your face in Deshaun Watson. Whoa, wait, I can't.
Yeah,
my
no
bad.
Rub,
that's
no rub, no touch, no.
Yeah,
no
my bad. I honestly
endings.
I did not think about that before I said it.
So the Texans will be added to the lawsuit. It hasn't happened officially yet, but this is per who other than Tony Busby.
Oh, boy.
Here's Tony Busby's statement. Based on what we've learned from the Houston Police Department, we will soon be joining this is weird language. We will soon be joining the Houston Texans organization and others as defendants in the ongoing lawsuits against Deshaun Watson. And then it goes on to explain some other things. Yeah, et cetera. This happened after the story from Jenny Vrentas in New York Times, as well as a controversial, to say the least, Rusty Hardin interview on the Texans flagship where he said that people get happy endings regularly and that it's not a crime.
They have egg on their face. Not surprising. I do think that you have to wonder, did the Texans really know what was going on in these hotel rooms that they were securing for Deshaun Watson? There definitely is an argument to be made that the head of security who secured Watson these NDAs after the first accuser came after him maybe should have done a little bit more digging, and that he, of all the people, is probably the one that should be the most liable in this situation. But we're talking about a civil case, and while a criminal case is going to be really hard to pursue to the point where you can sort of understand why the Harris County Assistant District Attorney didn't pursue it, because what evidence did you really have to bring into court with you as weaponry, you know, against Deshaun Watson? But in this situation, much like against Watson, where there's so many things stacking up, I mean, what can you really do as the Texans to defend yourself here? Civil case, we're talking like 51% probability that they may have known. I mean, I don't know if it's that high, but I mean, who are we to gauge that actual number? So I imagine the Texans are going to also be paying a rather large sum of money to some of these alleged victims, because I don't know what their defense is. Everything looks so bad with Watson, and I think you have to ask the people that were in charge of security, why weren't you more suspicious of what was going on after that first allegation came to light?
Here is the interesting part for me, because when I'm reading this initial statement by Tony Busby, I'm thinking, okay, what did the Texans know? How can you prove that the Texans did or didn't know anything? Quote, "We believe the Texans organization was well aware of Watson's issues but failed to act. They knew or certainly should have known." Okay, that sentence is what kind of trips me up. By no means am I defending the Texans or Deshaun Watson. I have no idea what they knew, know, or
no
didn't
one does,
know.
Really.
Okay, there's no way, right? But they knew or certainly should have known. To me, that indicates that Tony Busby is aware that he has no idea what he's talking about in regards to what they did, because it says they knew or certainly should have known. Okay, well, you're saying that they should have known something. They should have paid closer attention. They should have known that their superstar quarterback was getting favors or requesting favors from women at the Houstonian and other places. The Texans also didn't set up every single one of these massages.
Right.
They set up some of them at the Houstonian. So if they set up all 70 or 80 massages with different women, would they have some suspicions? Maybe, but we don't know how many they set up.
Right. And I think you also have to once again ask, should anyone have assumed that Deshaun Watson, the guy who gave his first paycheck to a bunch of service workers at NRG Stadium in the wake of Hurricane Harvey, is also the same guy who is a serial rub and tug addict? I mean, is that what comes to mind with your all-world quarterback? Do you want that to come to mind with your all-world quarterback?
The NDA thing, too, Paul, is like, NDAs are so common among prominent people.
Yeah.
Athletes, politicians, you had a story about Russell Wilson with NDAs, right?
Yes, he does. And it's, I mean, not a, doesn't involve massages. It's just there was a report done, I believe, by Greg Bishop of Sports Illustrated where they went into a press box to, get to know Russ in a setting where they could just chill and be, you know, off guard, and he had to sign an NDA or something. So, I mean, these are the things that you expect now in 2022, especially with cell phone cameras and all these other things available at all times. But really, to come back down to it, should the Texans have known this? I don't know if you can strongly make an argument yes for that, but I don't think the Texans really have a great leg to stand on here. And for some reason, all I can think of right now is that awful James Dolan song. Yes, James Dolan, the owner of the New York Knicks, he wrote a song, Vanessa, called I Should Have Known. Can you guess who the song was about?
Wait, what?
Yes.
How do I not know about this?
JD and the Straight Shot. That is the James Dolan band. He wrote a song called I Should Have Known. Can you guess what it was about?
I don't know.
Who it was about? Sean Mapes, Behind the Glass. Can you guess what I Should Have Known was about?
Stephon Marbury.
No. It also wasn't about Latrell Sprewell or any other...
Eddie Curry?
Mike
Sweeney.
No.
Spike Lee?
Nope, not him either. Honestly, it should probably be about, like, I Should Have Known that I should give up the team. But no, it's about his close personal friend, Harvey Weinstein.
I'm going to vomit.
It's a song where he goes, I should have known, I should have known. He was really creepy. I mean, we can play this at some point.
This is the owner of the Knicks?
Yeah, this is the owner of the Knicks.
How did this not get more attention?
Well, it's a great question because the song was stuck in my head for several weeks. I decided to look it up. I should have known, I should have known.
Yeah, we need to play this at some point.
It's legitimately that. And I don't know if the Texans should have known, but you can definitely, I mean, in 2022, it's very easy to pin blame on somebody. And again, like you, I'm not defending them. I'm giving them a little bit of benefit of the doubt as far as whether or not they knew this. Sean Mapes, why are you laughing behind the glass? Have you heard the song? Oh boy, are we about
no,
to play
I just,
it?
No, I just pulled it up, and when you type in JD in the Straight Shot, it's like the second thing that comes up is I Should Have Known. And yeah. Then I saw there's a lyrical video in case anyone wants to know the lyrics to this song.
Yeah, look, the Texans.
Bring it on karaoke night.
They should have known, that Deshaun Watson liked his massages and was really creepy in them. I don't know why we didn't know that that's what Deshaun Watson liked. Maybe we should have taken a hint from that slime dance that he does with his finger on his lip. We have the song. Oh, boy. We'll hear it.
I can't believe I didn't hear
this before. This is about Harvey Weinstein.
We were friends. We were friends. Talked for hours without end about his latest story. How to deal with fame and glory.
Yeah.
All the girls who adored him. Catered to his every whim. Nothing he could lose.
Is this real?
This is real. This is James Dolan. Wrote this song.
I should have known. I should have known. I should
have
known. I mean,
he's not a bad singer.
Myself across his tracks. Stopped him from these vile attacks. I should have known.
It's also about Deshaun Watson now.
We believed and didn't see through the lies he told us
right?
all. And led him to his endless fall.
JD and the Straight Shot is James Dolan's band. I'm Googling this now.
Yeah.
And I'm fascinated. So what should the Texans have known? Time will tell. And while Deshaun Watson isn't meeting with the media, Browns head coach Kevin Stefanski certainly has been. He's given the kind of legal, politically correct answers when he's asked, which is what we expect. Here's what he had to say about the situation.
Nate, we're here making sure that we get good practice in. Guys did a nice job out there today. I'm not going to comment past that, but you know, I think we've got to be respectful of the process, be respectful of the legal proceedings.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what every answer sounds like. I don't think that he can say much.
He should have known,
He should just sing that.
Should have known.
One of the things that we have gotten commented to us a lot is involving Jack Easterby. Well, did Jack know something about the culture? Is that why he wanted to change? Media members owe an apology to Jack Easterby. I don't agree with that because Jack Easterby is the one that was at Deshaun's press conference when he signed his new contract extension. So I don't think anybody knew.
He should have known. Yeah. Sorry, I've probably gotten that stuck in everyone's head. And
you have.
I'm sorry that just came to mind in the middle
but
of
no,
this segment.
I
was unprepared.
I think it's a really, really harsh accusation to say that somebody knew or didn't know, whether you're talking about a former PR person, a current VP of ops, a coach, and even the security guard that gave the NDA. I mean, you're saying that somebody knew about something truly egregious when they weren't even the one setting up every massage. So I just think everybody needs to be careful about saying that somebody should or shouldn't have known, or certainly
unless
that somebody
James
did.
Dolan.
Yeah. You can't monitor your quarterback all the time, and you can't control necessarily what they do off the clock. But certainly I think more will be revealed. Will the NFL decide to investigate this kind of the way that they say that they're investigating?
They're so scared right
now. The Commanders?
I think the NFL has never been more scared. They really don't know how to handle this because, I mean, everything we're seeing right now and all the new details that come out, none of these details should be surprising to anyone. Because, I mean, what are you expecting when you're talking about sexual encounters that are perhaps forced sexual encounters at a massage parlor? Exactly the things that we are reading, the very vivid descriptions of. And we are one of these societies where we can't process how messed up something is without some sort of visuals. The written word of this is pretty damn disturbing. For all of it, it always has been. And now I think all the similarities that you're getting between the allegations against him, it's just... Look, you could argue, like Rusty Harden's been, oh, well, Tony Busby, he's just doing, you know, what a lawyer's doing, and he's bringing all these accusations together and making them all sound similar. But I don't know. You go back in time and you hear from those police who are asked about the credibility of those victims, Vanessa, they will all tell you, yeah, we believe them. And here we are. So I imagine the Texans will end up paying something out of pocket as a part of this too now.
It could be. And yeah. When they are officially added to the lawsuit, that will be obviously public information. We'll be able to read more because as of now, I don't think they've been officially added. It was just announced, of course, by Tony Busby, who announces everything. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, we're going to talk a little bit of Astros. Who is the Astros' current weakest link, plus another massive extension for the Rams? That's next.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, mean what you say and say what you mean on Twitter. We're having that conversation in the
or just don't tweet.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the better way to go.
Hit the pause button. All right, the Astros fall 6-3 to the Seattle Mariners. Your girl's leaving town, Paul.
Oh, she keeps on causing a ruckus.
She does.
She really does. And look, I know, you know, Jeremy Branham and some others are upset that they've gotten to know my Seattle friends. Here's all I will say. The Mariners throughout this, God forbid you suggest someone cares or doesn't care during a series, but the Mariners clearly care about this matchup much more than the Astros do at this point in time. And that's got to stop. I mean, Seattle's won 3 of 4 series. And yes, the Astros did sweep the one series that they won. So overall on the season, it's 6-6 between these two teams. I don't expect the Mariners to challenge the Astros for the division title in any way, shape, or form. All I am saying is they got to take them a little bit more seriously. They have played very, very well and are treating it like it's the playoffs. And look, I think you also have to take a very, very hard look at Jose Urquidy right now and wonder, like, okay, well, what the hell's going on, dude? This is now, of those 6 losses to the Mariners thus far this year, he's been a part of 3 of them. He's really struggling, and as we continue to just wait and wait for when Lance McCullers will ultimately return to the Astros rotation, he is clearly the weakest link.
4 earned runs in 4 innings. Yes, the Astros still without Lance McCullers Jr. and still without Jake Odorizzi. Do we have a timeline on when he returns?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I couldn't find the answer to that.
Did appear to have his leg amputated.
That
in the middle
of the stretcher
was
a little dramatic.
Brought off. Well, maybe it wasn't dramatic because he's still out. I don't know. In the moment, with the way that it was discussed after the fact, it definitely seemed like we were perhaps a little bit more melodramatic than we needed to be. But yeah, you look at the rotation right now. It has been the strength to this point, much more so than the offense. But he, of that starting rotation, is clearly the guy that you're looking at and you're wondering, okay, what the hell's going on here? So can this be fixed? I mean, we saw obviously with Odorizzi, he had a couple of awful starts. And then before he got hurt, he put some together a couple of good performances. But I think right now, you know, you feel pretty good about Luis Garcia. You feel pretty good about Framber Valdez. Verlander's pitching like the Cy Young winner. What's going on with Urquidy?
This was the first series that Seattle has won at Minute Maid Park since 2018. To your point, I think that the Mariners get a little more juiced up about this quote-unquote rivalry than the Astros do. Dusty Baker last night in postgame did not sound worried about Urquidy at all. But to your point, a really, really great pitching lineup. Is he the weakest link? I think it's possible.
Yeah.
And hopefully he can get better throughout the season. But when you take inventory of the two that are missing, the Astros are just really, really lucky that Justin Verlander is on his game the way he is.
It's first world problems that we're talking about, too. So I don't think it's something to get too concerned about. But then you factor in some of the other issues, even if, you know, Alex Bregman and Yuli Gurriel had hits yesterday. I mean, your hitter in the three hole and your hitter in the six hole are batting respectively 220 and 218. I think in the rotation with Urquidy, it's just crazy that as he keeps on struggling the way that he does against the Mariners, who don't have that good of a lineup. They have good three, you know, Ty France, a guy who's hitting 327, and Julio Rodriguez, a promising rookie, who's going to definitely challenge Jeremy Peña for that award, and J.P. Crawford. They do have some good hitters in the middle of the lineup, but for the most part, you know, it's just as shaky as it was last year. You should be able to outscore these guys on a regular basis, and yet, like, two of your big players from in years past, in Bregman, and last year, in Yuli, who had a career year, they have just not been good. I would say as we get closer and closer and closer now, we're less than 2 months away from the trade deadline, you got to be seriously looking at first base, upgrading that. And I think you can't keep telling yourself that Yuli's going to figure it out. He is up there in age, and we do all lose it at some point. Father Time, what, undefeated, except for against Tom Brady? So it's one of those things where Urquidy is annoying me, but I'm still, like, just looking at this lineup and wondering where the hell's the pop and how do you improve it. I think they're going to need to make a trade at some point.
Does Yuli need to go back to eating pizza and drinking pop because he lost all that weight? Yeah, pop or soda, whatever.
It's a soda, yes. It's a Coke, even though if it's not actually a Coke,
it's a Coke.
I'll
never understand it.
Hey, I'll have a Coke. Yeah. What kind? A Dr. Pepper. Why not just ask for a Dr. Pepper?
Sense. But he lost all that weight and then has gotten worse since. So does he need to gain the weight back?
Sure.
I mean, maybe you could try that.
Isn't this what every person in the world wants? Like an excuse to get out
right,
of shape?
An excuse to eat more.
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp, a massive deal done. This is, you know, a mere couple of days after they wrap up their deal with Aaron Donald. So Cooper Kupp and the Rams reached the agreement, a 3-year extension. It ties him to L.A. for the next 5 years at $110 million and allows him to assume his rightful place among the NFL's highest paid wide receivers. That's per Adam Schefter.
The Rams are circumventing the salary cap, and we need an Elliot Ness kind of figure to bring him down. Yeah, I believe taxation is theft, but at the same time, when you are going around the rule book, and clearly have to be, just based off of all the massive contracts that this team has given out over the past half decade, something has to be done. Think about all the big deals that they have given out, whether it's Jared Goff, Todd Gurley, Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, now Cooper Kupp. There are other players along the way as well. How are they doing this?
The $75 million guarantee, by the way, given to Cooper Kupp represents the highest guarantee ever given to an NFL wide receiver or non-quarterback offensive player. So these
are, of course,
are,
it goes to these a are white not guy just shaking my
two,
head.
These are not just two massive deals. These are two record-breaking deals that the Rams made within the last 2 days, 48 hours.
By the way, Matt Stafford has a 4-year, $160 million contract on the books. Jalen Ramsey, a 5-year, $100 million contract on the books. Leonard Floyd, 4-year, $64 million contract on the books. Bobby Wagner, 5-year, $50 million contract on the books. Allen Robinson, 3-year, $46 million contract on the books. Joseph Noteboom, that doesn't even sound like a real person, 3 years, 40-year deal on the books. Rob Havenstein, 4 years, 32. Andrew Whitworth, who he's off the books now because he retired. Look at all those big contracts. How does this work? Seriously, can somebody explain it to me? What kind of cap tinkering are the Rams doing? They are clearly cheating the system, and they can give Cooper Kupp this contract.
Somebody on Good Morning Football, Tom Pelissero, was trying to explain it. It was kind of a bunch of babble. Andrew Brandt quote tweeted it, and this is the closest maybe I'll ever get to understanding it.
Okay.
Andrew Brandt, cash is money. Cap is accounting. Cash is what a player is receiving. Cap is what a player is counting. Signing bonus cap proration allows for cash now, cap later.
Oh.
So when golf was counting $21 million on Rams cap in 2021, it was no cash. It was just cap accounting.
They're like putting on credit, basically.
Right. It's like a credit. So I understand it a little more now. So basically, the theory is that eventually the Rams are going to have to pay the Pied Piper. When that will be, I don't know.
Business.
Stocks.
Dividends. Portfolios. Yeah, I'm lost. It was a nice try by Andrew. As always, math explained aloud without any visuals completely eludes me. How does anyone do math from hearing it? You know, like Ryan Fitzpatrick's kid given random multiplication challenge at a post-game press conference, and he can somehow do this in his head without writing it down?
It goes back to everybody being smart in different types of ways. Because what you and I are doing and what Sean does where we talk in front of a mic and all that would terrify some people. But for us, it's literally no problem. There are some people that when they hear math, the way that their a beautiful mind works, great movie, by the way, is that they can just do it. I don't get it. I've never understood it. I had to get a tutor and cheat a little bit in order to pass any math class that I ever passed. But we made it work. Yeah, I don't get it. Just being honest.
So you're good at talking into microphones and cheating?
Yeah, essentially. Well,
I mean, like, you know, that's how you get to the top.
It's a skill.
That's what you learn at school. When you go to a private school.
I didn't go to a private school.
You know how to grease some pockets.
Hell yeah, you know. Hey, daddy, give me some cash.
So since you both went to private high schools, is that how it worked? Your daddy would go to the principal's office and say, Sean Mapes will. Past the strict Jesuit algebra 2.
Okay, it wasn't strict Jesuit.
Wait, where'd you go? Oh, St. Pius. Sorry.
Damn. Yeah, so Catholics look alike.
Hey,
huh?
That's the maddest I've ever seen Sean get is when
Whoa,
I said he
I
went
need to go to
strict.
Come on.
I'm a pious
no
man.
No one of those losers. I went to another.
Hey, I can't allow you to say that. My cousin went to strict, so like, don't.
He's a loser. So what you do is you're like, hey, maybe I can. You know, donate, maybe buy the team new basketball jerseys or something.
Yeah.
And my son graduates.
What? How did it go for you and your private school in Tampa?
Well, you know, you come in, go to Ybor City.
Letterman jacket on.
What?
Get a nice, well, oh yeah, first off, I mean.
All district safety.
I'm a legend.
District safety.
I'm like, hey, you got to fix these grades. Do you want Paul to play? Paul don't play if he don't get an A. Give Paul his A, okay?
You were the protected athlete, were you? At public schools, we just fought. All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, 92 days until the NFL regular season. Speaking of math, and we are asking you who the best quarterback is that's currently not playing in the league. That's next.
ESPN.
97.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, it is a Thursday. I'm Vanessa Richardson, Paul Gallant, Sean Mapes with you. Thanks for listening either on the ESPN app. You can watch us on Twitch, or of course you can hear us on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Cam Newton, a lot of podcast appearances. He goes on a lot of podcasts. He wears a lot of interesting clothes.
His cute little hat.
Interesting dude. Dresses a little bit like a grandma or an auntie, if you ask me.
I think he looks a lot like a 1700s French frontline soldier.
Really?
Generally, yeah.
He was on a podcast talking about his role. Obviously, his return to the Panthers didn't go as he thought. And the subject of quarterbacks really ruled the offseason because there was a lot of quarterback movement. Not a great quarterback draft class. Here's what Cam Newton had to say about his skills under center.
So ask your question and let's debate. Because at the end of the day, comparing apples to apples, you know, oranges to oranges, certain situations for certain situations, And if you think that I couldn't be on somebody's team right now, you a damn fool.
As a starter. As a franchise, as a Super Bowl contender. Bro.
Can we pause for a second?
You are big.
Sorry. All right. First off, I just love Vanessa that he started this off with, you know, at the end of the day, apples to apples, oranges to oranges,
Hakuna
situation
Matata.
To situation.
Yeah.
Like, means all no of worries. These are just like unnecessary
cliches.
Filler words as he like ramps up to saying, hey, I should be on a team. By the way, Channing Crowder is the one that is doing the interview with him. And I believe Ryan Clark is the other guy on it.
I knew Ryan was on it, but I didn't know the other person.
So I got to give Channing Crowder a lot of credit because Channing Crowder does not sit back and just let Cam Newton spew his BS. Anyway, continue.
A starter, as a franchise, as a Super Bowl contender, bro, Cam, you are big as f***.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to be a quarterback, bro, mm-hmm. you are a defensive end playing quarterback. Bro, I love you. I draft you to my teams on Madden.
Right.
And I trade for you.
Right. We ain't talking
but
about
right
Madden.
Now, bro, about, really? You are 33 years old.
Yes, sir.
You done got old.
Yeah.
You're one of the best 32 quarterbacks in the world right now. Cam, I cannot accept that. I can't accept it.
That I'm not.
I saw what you did in New England.
Mm-hmm.
When you went back to Carolina, I saw what happened. Like the proof's in the pudding.
Wow.
I got to give Channing Crowder a lot of credit.
I hadn't heard that full soundbite. I can't believe that he had him as a guest on his podcast and then went at him that hard. But I mean, I respect it.
It's not even that hard. It's just saying the truth. And the last two iterations of Cam Newton that we have seen, he has been not good. And if you are this transcendent kind of player, which I imagine Newton still believes that he can be.
He thinks he is, yeah. Cam Newton's the kind of person that it's always everyone else's fault.
And it does feel that way. And while he did say that there are some things he could have done differently in this interview, it does seem like he feels the next situation is going to be different. But when you've been to two different situations where it's not the Panthers, that's a terrible team. But the Patriots situation was set up for him to, at the very least, be competent. And he was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league when he was healthy for them. So the proof is in the pudding. Sometimes you just lose it and you lose it quickly. And do you want someone like Cam Newton, who clearly has a lot of confidence in himself, who has a pedigree that's going to make other players in the locker room look at him probably differently than they would at a starting quarterback who's trying to prove himself, establish himself in the league. Does a player like that belong on a roster? I don't think you can strongly make that argument anymore because he's a gadget player, I think, at this point in his career. And I think when you have the confidence that Newton's had because of what a great career he's had up to this point, it's hard to keep a guy like that in a role that he is not used to. You see it in the NBA all the time with like John Wall or mm-hmm. with Russell Westbrook.
John Wall, who we're paying not to play. Cam Newton is 33 years old, and that's not young for a quarterback. I guess it's young-ish if you're somebody that's been really well-protected and you have that kind of longevity career health. You're Matt Ryan and you're 39. But when you haven't produced the way that Cam Newton, other than that one game that he came back for the Panthers, and remember he looked at the camera and said, I'm back, and it was like, oh, yeah. Wow, he's back. And then, spoiler alert, he was not back. Are there 32 quarterbacks in the league that are better than Cam Newton?
As we continue our countdown, what are we on, number?
92 days. That's just an impromptu song.
I like it. Do you think JD in the straight shot would do it better?
92 days.
I should have known.
We're gonna stick
Harvey
with our
Weinstein was
day job. Whoa, hello,
creepy guy.
Now, what's your 92 jersey number?
Oh shoot, 92.
It's okay. I'll give you time to think about it. Also, are
DJ
we sure
Reader.
It's 92? Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, and yesterday was 93. That's all I can say.
Okay, so today would be 92.
We are on track 92. From yesterday. So,
thank you, Sean, for the hashtag math.
Reggie White, Michael Strahan, boom.
Are there 32 quarterbacks better than Cam Newton?
And I would say right now you probably could as far as starters go. And the question that we were kicking around after the show yesterday.
It's our question of the day, NFL question of the day.
Are there any quarterbacks who are like what quarterback who is not playing right now?
Not even as a backup.
Do you think would actually be good today? And we're talking retired players. We're talking guys who have maybe been blackballed from the league. We're talking about guys who maybe retired because they got in a snowboarding accident. Look, what do you think? Is there one
was
quarterback
that an Andrew Luck?
Out there? That was Andrew Luck. Because Andrew Luck was the one I was going to say.
That's obviously 100% forever and always mine. I will say this about Andrew Luck.
He looks skinny now.
He's only made two public appearances since retiring. One was as a guest speaker for a book club luncheon in Indianapolis, and one was alongside RG3 at the college football championship, which was at Lucas Oil Stadium. Both times he looked very skinny. That's the only thing that gives me pause, is that I think that he's still, quote-unquote,
like
in
burly
shape.
Man. Yeah.
Well, yeah. But from a football perspective, he doesn't look large like he used to. The other angle you could go, okay, Colin Kaepernick, Johnny Manziel, Cam
Manziel,
Newton.
Yeah, he's better than 32
So we want to know what you guys think. Who's the quarterback, best quarterback not currently playing in the league?
You can't say Breeze. You can't say Ben Roethlisberger, because the last you saw those two, my God, it was tough to watch. Other guys not in the league right now. Brock Osweiler.
So you think he could suit up right now?
You know what I did? I looked up, because there is a football league going on, a professional football league going on right now.
The USFL.
USFL. We're in the playoffs.
And so I looked up the USFL passing leaders for this season.
Okay.
The leader in yards is Kyle Sloter at 1,700 yards, but he has 9 touchdowns and 10 interceptions.
He's a gambler.
he's trick-or-treat.
Renegade. So
then you have Jordan Ta'amu. Maybe you remember from Ole Miss and being on the Chiefs practice squad.
That's a throwback name.
And I think he was on the XFL. He's 1,500 yards, 11 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. But go down to the fourth leading passer, Case Kukas from Northern Arizona University. 1,000 yards passing, 9 touchdowns, only 3 interceptions. He takes care of the ball. He moves the chains. Give me Case Kukas as the best.
Is PJ? I'm seeing online. Name. PJ Walker, I think, is still on the Panthers. He's still a backup.
Still in the league. Yeah.
If he was not, I would say PJ Walker. But
yes, and if Tom Brady had stayed retired, he would be the obvious answer.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Would be easy one.
I don't know. Andrew Luck. The thing about Andrew Luck is that he's so smart that he could probably pick up the playbook super quickly.
I do think he would be good. I do. Like, even though he's smaller, and I don't know the last time he's thrown a football. Like, I still would trust him in, like, a training camp and then start the season. I would at least be interested. I wouldn't be like, this is a disaster like it would be for Manziel.
How about Alex Smith?
Yeah, his injury, though.
The injury,
I don't want him to play football.
Yeah,
ever again.
I want him to be protected.
I don't want him to play necessarily either. But
could he?
Could he play? Is he better than some of the starters out there?
How about Fitzpatrick?
Fitzpatrick, I wonder if he legitimately can't go anymore because he had a hip injury last year. And, you know, old people and hips, like, once that happens, no offense, you know, that's where it all starts to go. And,
4776
hip injuries are serious.
Cam or Cap or Baker. But Baker Mayfield is still technically
on a roster.
Baker is on a roster. Colin Kaepernick is an interesting one. Without even getting to the political, commentary and all of that, he's been out for what? This will be the 6th year?
It's been a while.
5th or 6th year that he is.
16 was his last year.
Not been in the league. So that's a long time not to be in the league, whatever the reason is. So that, I would question if he could still pick up a playbook the way that he did. But when you see the videos of him throwing, he obviously had that throwing session that we never heard anything about again in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
They say that he looks good. Maybe he's one.
Would Philip Rivers still be decent? Rivers wasn't awful. Yeah. When
He wasn't Breeze and Roethlisberger bad his last year.
Right.
He was very like, I'm going to go out not quite on top, but not quite on the bottom either. Like, I just don't think that he wanted to limp into retirement.
Tony Romo had a lot of injuries.
No. I mean, we're wondering if Andrew Luck can still play. There's no chance that Tony Romo's thrown a football like since he retired.
Hey, guys, maybe Troy Aikman out of all the former Cowboys quarterbacks.
Is he 60 though?
He's like 50 something.
Yeah.
I know because I've looked it up.
Hello. Why'd you look it up?
Just wondering how old he was before the show. we were Googling.
Oh, yeah. Vanessa was just Googling like older attractive men.
Yeah.
I think Howie Long is what started.
Howie Long is very good looking for being in his 60s. Very good. Actually, you know what started it is Kyle Long tweeted out pictures of he and the men in his family as women, like with using an app. It was very funny.
How do you think Robert Griffin III is at this point? I mean, he's 32 years old.
Yeah. could he still suit up? He's one that I think could have lasted longer. I think he just was over it.
He did.
Yeah, I think he was sick of being like a backup.
Right.
And he was like, I would rather just be on the ESPN college football set than do this.
Shout out to RG3. He and I have the same agent.
He could make a team. I think he could make a team.
He was on a team not too long ago. Like, he played in 2020. He might have been on a team last year. Honestly, I don't remember.
No, he was doing college football games for
5516, says Philip Rivers. Yeah, I mean, again, he didn't really limp off into retirement. He still had a little bit of gas left in the tank. I just think that he wanted to.
The check engine light was on.
The check engine light was on, and we respect people that tap out at that point.
If you could get someone else to literally throw the football, I think Peyton Manning would be the best. Of just, he sets everything up, goes to Omaha, whatever, and then someone else snaps it and throws the football.
And he doesn't need to use his neck at all.
How about Mike Glennon, who is not in the league and did play in the league last year? Everyone gave him ridiculous contracts over the course of his career.
He got his bag. He got his bag for sure.
He played last year, right?
He did, yes.
Okay. Yeah.
All right, coming up on Vanessa and Gallant. The NBA Finals, our resident Boston fan chimes in on that. Plus, sports rules that annoy you. Tell us yours, we'll tell you ours. That's next.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
All right, Paul, get it out of you right now, you Irishman. Go ahead.
Yeah, dude. That's what you take, Warriors. You come up to our part of town, we're going to kick your ass up and down that court. Ooh, look at me. I'm Draymond Green. I'm a football player playing basketball. Get the bleep out of here.
Our Irish-blooded, Catholic, Boston native, Paul Gallant, very passionate about the Boston Celtics, and of course they won last night.
You, Draymond.
Oh, so you're not done. Keep going.
Think about the children, though.
Yeah, but you have to do it with the accent.
Well, it's hard. See, it's hard. It's hard to do it. If I can't swear up here, then I can't really get into my Boston accent that much.
The khakis.
Because words like the F-bomb, it's like just a natural. It's an adjective. Now,
and you're Irish.
Some of these West Coasters, they're soft. They don't get it. Oh, words have meaning. Words have feeling. Oh, no. Oh. That is essentially something that, you know, people on the left coast can't take. People in the south, they can't take it either. They don't like how rude and aggressive we are. Sorry, we're just little short, Irish, you know what, small people that are angry at the world. Perhaps because of endowment. Perhaps because of other things. It's the Irish curse.
Whoa.
We're mad all the time. We're aggressive all the time. And it's funny. I was in a group chat last night with my friends, and I was saying this was one of the worst calls that I've ever seen. We'll get on into that in a little bit. And they're like, why are you so angry? I was like, I'm not angry. This is just who I am. This is how I talk.
It is a permanent state of, we'll call it energy for Paul Gallant, that I had to learn was not anger. It's just intensity.
It's just
and we
intensity.
Love it on Vanessa it. And Gallant. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Of course, that's Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes with you. So Boston is now up 2-1. Boston, after the Warriors' fourth quarter meltdown. Draymond was not good.
No.
This was an interesting stat I saw on ESPN. Less than 10 combined total points, rebounds, and assists combined. So not a good game for him. The Warriors were out-rebounded 47-31. So a good game for the Celtics or a bad game for the Warriors. A little bit of both.
Well, I would say for Golden State going forward, the great news for them is that Klay Thompson was awesome. And I feel that, too, with the way Steph Curry started off the game, Steph Curry's been really good this entire series through three games. So I'm feeling pretty good coming out of this one if I am Golden State. But the guy that you outlined, Draymond Green, that's the one that you should be pointing at. And, I mean, what I noticed from Draymond Green in this game were just chippy plays. And he's lucky he did not get teed up. He's lucky he did not get called for a flagrant foul for some of the stuff he was doing, which included just like grabbing people, diving into them like he was a football player. And I mean, at one point when Jaylen Brown was shooting free throws, he's essentially lining up in a sprinter's stance from outside the 3-point line and running as fast as he could, clearly trying to distract Jaylen Brown in the midst of his free throw. That's all he did. It was just all of those same tactics. And this is the first time, as a guy who has always liked Draymond Green, now that he's going up against my favorite team, this is the first time where I've ever been like, oh my God, he's annoying as hell. I get it. Now I get how Rockets fans felt during all those series.
What was annoying about him to you last night?
Specifically, when he was getting in a sprinter stance from outside the three-point line while guys were taking free throws just to be annoying, that was where I was like, okay, dude, you're the guy that's coming in from the end of a bench in a college basketball game that has no business being on the court. And since you don't have any actual discernible talent, you're going to wildly flail at people and hope that you can get under somebody's skin. And he was much better at doing that in game two, but he was out of control in this past game. And I think one of the funny parts about a Boston crowd, and we're going all the way back to the 1700s and the Boston Massacre and stuff.
Whoa.
This is a group of people that know how to get under other skin. Well, look, the Boston Massacre, you could argue that was the fault of the crowd in Boston. Like, they were throwing rocks and snowballs like they were Philadelphians at British soldiers with muskets. And you would obviously get a little scared, perhaps, if all of a sudden this is happening. Next thing you know, you're shooting at these people. Boston and Massachusetts people have always been known to kind of be this way, to have this different kind of unnecessary edge. So during the game, there was a chant that broke out in the garden for bleep you, Draymond. And the pearl clutching by the Golden State Warriors after the fact, it is pretty awesome to see. I'm not going to lie. I love it. This is Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors.
Your thoughts on the crowd's response to him all night?
On the crowd's response to Draymond? Classy. Very classy.
It was. Very classy.
Here's the thing, and I understand, and I like Steve Kerr, but
no batteries were thrown.
He does the the whole like subtle being sarcastic thing. And if you can't handle a Boston crowd, I feel like these guys just have a bad taste in their mouth after losing. To be honest,
teams from the Western Conference, they don't deal with crowds.
Yeah,
like
that's true.
If you're Boston, Philadelphia, New York, and those teams are playing each other a lot, this is just how it is. And this is, I think, culture shock for them because in the finals, who have the Golden State Warriors played? It's usually been like a LeBron team.
Right.
It's been like Cleveland or something like that. And Cleveland, while it has intense fans, it's a totally different level. And Klay Thompson also clutched some pearls.
He did, yeah. Draymond Green had an interaction as well with reporters who were questioning him. And here's Draymond on that.
Are you conscious at all of what you're saying about the X's and O's, the game plans, the adjustments could be making their way back to Boston staffers and influencing their decision making at all?
No. I don't say much different on the podcast than I say to you right here. So, nah. What's the X's and O's that I said on the podcast? You all right?
He actually asked. The only real thing I noticed that like really stood out, he talked about how to cover White, Smart, and Horford differently between games one and two. That was really only.
Oh, yeah, that was just contesting shots. If that's X's and O's, then you're reaching for something. It's all good, though. Keep going. Reaching heavy. The only thing, you find that they are taking X's and O's away from your podcast. The only thing you said is White, Smart, and Horford.
I'm not trying to blow it up.
I mean, you went for it, but hey, respect. Appreciate the podcast promo you just gave me, though. The Draymond Green Show. You next time, just mention it that way.
So this was really obnoxious to me because if you're going to do a podcast and all of that, especially during the finals, yes, reporters are going to listen because you're going to maybe, quote unquote, give away certain things or have interesting nuggets. Don't be mad when somebody brings it up and promotes it.
I got to say, before I heard this, with the way that reporters were clutching their pearls after this, I thought that he was like a real douche to him probably. I heard this and I'm like, yeah, I doubt that there was a lot of X's and O's that were brought up there. And I thought it was kind of funny that Draymond was screwing with the guy. I really did. I don't think Draymond did anything there that was, like, mean. Because I'm with him. Like, I doubt that he said, like, yes, this is the kind of rotational defense that we're going to play against these specific guys. Like, no, he didn't do that. I got a kick out of it. I mean, look, anything he says is going to come with a lot more scrutiny, just given the way that he played in this past game. He did not play very well. But I remember thinking to myself when I saw like all the like responses to it, Vanessa, I was like, oh man, he must have said something really bad. And I watched it and I was like, I actually see his point here. Perhaps he was a little sarcastic with the way that he did it.
Yeah, he was just in a bad mood and he was sarcastic. But to me, it's like, okay, this reporter is essentially kind of promoting your podcast in a way. Like, don't be crappy.
I don't know. I don't think he was crappy.
But you
like
the back and forth. You used to get into it with O'Brien.
True.
So that's more of your thing.
I mean, I thought he was like, all right, we'll come with some specifics. Like, what specifically do you think I tipped off? And I do think that guy was listening to the podcast and I think he was grasping at something. I don't know. It's interesting, though, the way that this whole thing has gone down. And there was a moment last night in Vanessa that had me distracted from an entire quarter of basketball, and I thought that this could be fun to interact with. 713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. So there was a point where the Warriors got a 7-point play in the third quarter because Steph Curry, who was around half court, jump stops and takes a three from about, I don't know, 4 to 5 feet outside the three-point line, and he's going forward as he does it. Al Horford, who is slow to closing out, he decides, oh, shoot, I got to get out here. I gotta defend him. So he jumps forward as Steph Curry's jumping forward. Steph lands, and he lands awkwardly on Al Horford, and it should have been clearly a foul. It should have been an and one. But I thought it was ridiculous that it was a flagrant because Steph Curry was going forward. What, Al Horford's not supposed to contend the shot just because Steph Curry's going forward? And it
dumb rule.
Reminded me of back in the day when James Harden would, like, flail his legs out because of the landing zone obsession that we now have with fouls because of the time that Klay Thompson got hurt by Zaza Pachulia. And I just thought to myself, wait a second, this is a flagrant foul now? And it ended up being a 7-point possession for Golden State because they got the and one and they got the ball back and then they hit a 3-pointer right afterwards. So it has me thinking, like, that rule to me, by letter of the law, that is the accurate ruling of that rule. But I think it's a stupid rule. Like, oh, wow, you stepped in someone's landing zone. Well, someone's landing zone in the 2022, it's massive. And we don't live in the Matrix where when you're jumping forward, you can stop. I don't think there was any intent behind Al Horford to get under the guy's legs, and I feel like that shouldn't have been caught. So it has me wondering, like, rules in sports that you think are bad.
Which rules do you hate? And it doesn't have to just be basketball. We're talking yes. NFL. We're talking all sports. You can include college in that. Which sports do you hate? All right, we got to toss to break, but coming back, we want to hear your opinion on that. Plus, we're talking more Deshaun Watson in the news from yesterday. But first, Paul's going to tell you about a little PIN action.
Yes, Passive Investor Network, passiveinvestor.net. Look, if you're looking to make money through real estate, well, these guys at the Passive Investor Network can help you. Even if you're a beginner, they're going to have a 5-year personalized plan for you. The PIN process is how they do it. And look, they will talk with you and they will walk you through it no matter what your income might be. Ways that you can. If you're probably thinking to yourself, no, I don't have enough to do something like this. It's not a problem. You want to sit down with these guys and they'll walk you through it. And what the Passive Investor Network does is that they look all around Houston for areas that they feel like are going to eventually be on the come up. They get these properties, they turn and they flip them. And I mean, if you go on their bus tour, and there's going to be one taking place the Saturday after this one on June 18th, you will see how they find some of these homes and flip them as well in every stage of the investment process. You want to go again to passiveinvestor.net and enter promo code ESPN to go on that bus tour for free. Passiveinvestor.net, promo code ESPN. It's the Passive Investor Network. Tell them Paul Gallant sent you.
ESPN 97.5.